Hey, Steve. This is Don. I'm about 100 kilometers south of Deep River here on a bridge crossing the Ottawa River. And it's part of the Light Driver's Waltz. I'm riding my ride, my version. I'm not sure how much I'll fully make it around, but I'm enjoying my time. I appreciate the podcast. I'm supporting you at a level that I can manage. And especially appreciate the rider stories and your own bikepacking stories, and the other guests. Every event, every episode's been surprisingly helpful, and I appreciate that too. So maybe I'll meet you out here one day on one of these rides. But best wishes, and I'm about 10 years older than you, and been through some of the same stuff you've been through recently, and. No great emotional damage anywhere to anybody, and it all gets better. All right, thanks.
Hello again, friends. Welcome to My Back 40 and the My Back 40 podcast. I'm your host, Steve O'Shaughnessy. Sorry I've been missing. A lot going on. Don, thanks for your voice intro. I really appreciate it. And you know what? In terms of the support level, like, it's fine. You could support me at $1, and it means a lot. So it doesn't really matter to me. But the fact that you're tuning in and listening to my monologues and my guests, it means a lot. And I'm really glad you're getting something out of it, because that's the whole point of the podcast. And I also acknowledge that the podcast has taken a shift over the last, oh God, I've been doing it like for 5 years now, maybe 4 or 5 years. And it's been shifting, and it's kind of the way I wanted it to be. You know, I know I haven't talked about this for a while, but I'm not really too happy with the way I manage the My Back 40 podcast, but the Bike Pack Canada podcast. I know that, a lot of people didn't really appreciate the way I transitioned so quickly from one podcast to the next. And I don't feel so great about it, to be honest. And I haven't really thought about it for some time. But the reason I made the shift is because I wanted to take the podcast in a different direction. You know, I wanted to, obviously it will always be about endurance athletics and cycling and tips and tricks. And I don't really like talking about gear, because, well, I can talk about that in a minute, but maybe bike packing gear, but like bike tech and what tires should I run or what sealant should I run? It doesn't really interest me, because I think there's so many products, there's so many ways you can navigate all that stuff. You know, like, you can bike pack on a road bike, a gravel bike. There's not one perfect bike for anything. So I just like, you know, run what you brung. Strap your shit on that bike and go, right? That's all you need to do. And then you learn from that. And this bike isn't comfortable. I'd like my front end a bit higher, suspension, no suspension, blah, blah, blah. But, and then also I wanted to follow some curiosities of mine. I didn't want to always talk about bike stuff, right? I wanted to talk about other things. And lately, obviously, people who've been listening for a while know that I lean pretty heavy into men's mental health. So to know that Don is getting something out of it and can relate to some of the experiences that I share and my guests share, it's important, especially from the point of view of mental health, because oftentimes when you're struggling, you feel like you're the only one who's struggling, and it's not the case. So to share stories and to share experiences, mine and my guests, I think just kind of listeners can take solace in the fact that if they're struggling, they're not alone in the struggle. So I've been apologizing a lot for my frequency. I started a new job. I know I alluded to that a couple weeks ago. I started a job with TELUS, and it's been pretty full on. I mean, in terms of training, I'm going to be an installation and repair guy, climbing poles with spurs. It's a bit of a departure for me from the last like decade or so of jobs that I've had, but it's something that's in my background. When I worked for Whistler Blackcomb, I was a telephony guy, network administrator, and I was often in the field with a backpack, snowboarding with like a Milwaukee drill and a backpack full of tools and a wireless dish in another hand, going down to a restaurant to like hook up wireless to say, so it's in my wheelhouse, but I haven't done it for a long time. So the learning curve has been interesting, and I've been shadowing my colleague and kind of ripping up and down the Columbia Valley here. And I'm not trained to climb yet, so I'm basically watching him do his thing and helping where I can and trying to learn the plant. And there's a lot. And then doing computer-based training. So I've been pretty, I don't know, I wouldn't say tapped out, but just occupied, extremely occupied, especially when you go from being unemployed to having a job. It's quite a shift. But I'm happy to be back at it, and I'm able to do this job in my hometown, which is exciting, and the opportunities and the benefits, I think, are great. You know, I'm looking forward to the next. Hopefully this will be, like my girlfriend says, time's up. You know, this has to be the last job I ever have, to be honest. So I'm committed to sticking with TELUS for as long as possible and just trying to do good work and set myself up for some sort of minuscule retirement, maybe, when I get too old to climb poles. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, I've been pretty occupied. To go back to the unemployment thing, being unemployed was pretty awesome, actually. I make a good unemployed guy. I was super active, lots of adventures, solo and with my girlfriend. I did some bike packing, paddle packing, riding bikes in Montana. And then most recently, I ripped down to, a couple things. I kind of jokingly say it's a midlife crisis / celebratory purchase, but I bought myself a 1989 Isuzu Trooper that I found. My good buddy Dale sent me this posting, and I followed up with it. I drove to North Vancouver, met the couple who owned it, took it for a test drive, put a deposit on it, and bought it. It's a pretty wicked vehicle. It's lifted, 33 by 10 tires, full platform in the back with drawers for camping. It included tons of camping gear, 100-watt solar on the roof, powering a 1,300-watt-hour lithium-ion battery, house battery, that's running a fridge. It's got an onboard compressor for airing up and down. It's a pretty sweet rig. I showed it to a buddy last night, and he was like, oh my God, this thing. It's got some dents, a little bit of rust. Nothing too bad, you know, considering it's an 89. But I bought that thing, and I drove it to Moab, which is 1600K. And then Tabitha and I hung out there for a bit and rode bikes and went a little bit of off-roading in it. You know, it's a grandma, Sandy is her name. She's a bit of a grandma. So I took it easy on her, but drove down to Mineral Bottom down by the Green River in Canyonlands. And it's a type of road that you might have saw the post, but if you look over the edge of the road, you can see all the switchbacks leading down into the canyon. That's how steep it is. Super fun, though. Had a great, great time riding bikes in the desert in very inclement weather, actually. It was really hot, actually. So it was early rise, riding bikes kind of in the morning, and then just like basically walking around the site, you know, tanning, I guess, if you will, just baking in the sun, baking up in the mesa, and working on, you know, different projects. And yeah, it was a really, really good time. And I miss her so much. I wish I could have stayed down there, but I had to start my work. So I'm back here in Canada. Seasons are changing. I've slowly maybe getting the fat bike ready to do some winter riding, which I'm really excited about, and which alludes to this podcast, which I'll get to in a minute. So yeah, lots and lots of adventure this summer, and my cup is filled, to be honest. It was really good to get out, and I spent a lot of time outside, that's for sure. A lot of riding bikes, and no races or bikepacking events to speak of, but you know, just filling my cup, doing my thing, and just trying to enjoy, you know, the last little bit of unemployment before I, you know, kind of get back to the grind. And feeling good. You could probably hear it in my voice. There's a bit of levity in my voice now, and that just, you know, goes without saying, you know, being able to adventure with somebody, and either solo or with a partner, and just experience nature and lots of laughing and lots of nature. And I don't know, people, I don't know if you've, anyone who hasn't ridden in Moab before, I would encourage it. I actually met a guy in Montana, and he was kind of like, meh, Moab, whatever, you know, it's not really his jam. And it's like riding on Mars for anyone who's never been there. It's fairly technical depending on where you go. Their definition of quote flow trails is a lot different than ours in BC, that's for sure. But considering where you're riding, it kind of makes sense. But technical riding, lots of steep ups, lots of steep downs, endless traction, because you're riding on basically petrified dunes and sandstone. And I experienced no flats despite passing many a teddy bear cactus. I was kind of shocked, actually. I was just kind of waiting. I mean, I run tubeless with sealant, obviously, but no flats were had, which was great. And I took my vintage Cro-Mag Nice Dreams fat bike with 27 plus, 27.5 by threes, with like a set of Chronicles that I used to run, because I used to bike pack on that bike. And the Chronicles were like the perfect tire for there. Super grippy. And the 3-inch tires were great too, because it gave me that extra gription. But also when you hit the sand, it was just like floating over sand. It was like a really good bike. And Hardtail beat up my butt a little bit, but because it's fairly chundery there. But anyway, if you haven't been to Moab, make a point of going there and just experiencing that region. It's getting very busy, you know, attracting people from all over the world to ride bikes there. And it's super interesting. So I would encourage it. But yeah, I had a great time. And now I'm back to the grind, and trying to get back into the podcast flow, if you will. And that leads me into this. Oh, what I wanted to say too is, like, Don, I apologize for your voice intro coming out so late. I was thinking, like, I must have a voice intro in here, and I don't think I've published it before. And if I have, I apologize. So I was just going through my email and I found it. Yeah, I want to apologize for the delay. I haven't been getting that many, but if you're listening to this and you're out on an adventure, or you are at home sitting around reading a magazine, and you've got something on your mind, reach out to me. Send me a voice note, myback40podcast@gmail.com. You can just email it to me. You can even DM it if you want. You can DM it via Instagram or Facebook if we're connected in that way. At myback40_podcast on Instagram if you haven't followed me already. And yeah, just send me a voice note. I love hearing from people. And hearing from people in the voice message way has facilitated really good relationships with people. You know, people who engage with me, I really try to make an effort to engage back. And if I don't, I apologize. But I try to answer every single email I get. And I think it just helps build a community. And I just really love connecting with people. And some of those people have turned into really, really good friends and people that I'm really quite close to. And it's just part of what I'm trying to build here. Invermeer for me is very isolating. I went for a beer with a buddy last night, but we hadn't seen each other for months. Parenthood. And it's a small town, but everyone's got their own things going on, right? So to go out with a buddy last night in real life was quite wonderful. So yeah, I would encourage anyone to just reach out to me and leave me a voice memo. And also, to support the podcast, the easiest way to do that is to share, rate, and review it on your favorite listening platform. Give it a 5-star review. It helps me pop up in the algorithms a little bit better on all these different aggregators, if you will, and allows me to reach more people. And I want to thank my Patreon supporters for continuing to support me throughout these times of, I guess, these lulls in mic time that I've been experiencing. So I want to thank everyone. I also want to thank Graham Mann of Rollingdale and Manmade Cycles for supporting the podcast. You can check him out online. Just Google Manmade Cycles or Rollingdale Cycles. And we had a podcast, two podcasts ago, I think number 170, you can check out. We had a great conversation. Graham's a really good dude. lots of experience and makes it is basically the new helmsman for Rollingdale Cycles. And I think if you're looking for a custom bike, like I say, I talk about Timber all the time. My Rollingdale Cycles bike, the one I took to Antelope Wells, New Mexico. And even today, I'm going to go for a rip today on it, just maybe a 50K loop, my standard 50K loop that I always do. But it's such a, it fits so amazingly. Like, to get a bike built to your measurements and also to your spec. Like, I made changes to that bike, shortened it, you know, changed the down tube, make put a little bit of a belly in the down tube so I get a big ass frame bag in there. You know, to work with a builder who's open-minded, who is passionate about what they do. And I want to warn you too, if you do start, if you broach that realm of getting yourself a custom bike, it's an investment. And this bike, I'll be buried with that titanium rig. They're beautiful machines. They're very well built. And the ride and the comfort of titanium is, you know, is amazing. And I can't recommend Rollingdale Cycle and Man-Made Cycle enough. So please check out those two companies. And again, if you're looking to invest in a bike that you're going to have literally forever, reach out to them and get the process started. I'm not sure what the delays are or what his workflow is right now in terms of getting something finished. But if you're looking for something for spring, I would reach out immediately right now and start working on that project. You won't regret it. I also want to thank Dynamic Cyclist for being a sponsor of the podcast. MB40 is going to save you 25% off their programs. And with an app in the palm of your hand on your phone, you get strength and conditioning training, injury prevention, stretching, mobility, yoga, all the things. They even have coaching programs. So if you're training up, and you know what, now is the best time. Now we're going into fall, into winter. You might have some inside time. Honestly, I'd recommend anyone to buy a fat bike. I push this all the time, but yeah, I know winter's cold. Get a fat bike. Ride a fat bike. If you live in a place that has any type of snow, and we're really lucky here in Invermeer because the Columbia Valley Cycling Society grooms trails here. I would say we have well over 30 kilometers of trail, groomed trail here that we can ride. But I tend to like to ride groomed stuff, ungroomed stuff. You know, you might be off your bike walking. That's part of it. If you're not walking your fat bike, you're not doing it right. Get off the groomers and start doing some primitive stuff. You know, get like boot pack trails, snowshoe pack trails, especially after they've set up. Depending on snow depth, you can just ride through the snow. Groomers, mix it all up. Riding a fat bike is high strain. It's hard work. You need to adjust your expectations. I always find it's funny when you go back to spring riding on your, I call them pizza cutters, on your skinny tires after riding fat bikes all winter. It's shocking how fast you go because fat bikes are really high strain. But anyway, train if you want to get out and still ride bikes and have that strength and fitness for the spring, get out and ride a bike. Combine that with Dynamic Cyclist using the code MB40 to save 25%, you're golden. So whatever you're planning for in the spring and summer of next year in 2025, even saying that is crazy. Sign up now, save 25%, and get yourself into shape. You're going to feel better, stronger, and faster on the bike. Can't recommend it enough. I also want to thank Ryan Draper at Cycling 101 for being a supporter of the podcast. If you use the code MB40, you're going to get half off your first month of coaching with Ryan. Ryan's a great mentor. The relationship I have with Ryan is definitely more of he's mentored me over the last little while. He's been a great supporter and supporter of the podcast, and I can't thank him enough. And again, in combination with getting a fat bike, Dynamic Cyclist, and then getting a coach for something that you're planning in 2025, that's a great combo. So if you drop the code MB40, you're going to get 50% off your first month of coaching. Again, I also want to thank Redshift Sports for being a supporter of the podcast. Suspension stems and seat posts, their Arclight Pro pedals. I've been using the Arclight Pro pedals without the lights, the flat pedals on Timber, and I've done lots of bike packing with them, and they're great. They're smooth. They're grippy. And I can't recommend their stuff highly enough. I've got their suspension stem on my fat bike, and I've got the suspension seat post on Timber with a Fox Stepcast 34 on the front of Timber now, which I got this summer. But the I so wish when I rode the Divide that I had I rode it rigid, had a Karate Monkey fork on the front and nothing on the back, fully rigid, and I so wish I had a suspension seat post, because I remember leaving, was it I always get this mixed up. There are sections of washboard road on the Divide, and I'm not joking, 50 miles 75, 80 miles of washboard where there's no out, where there's no way around some of it, and you get beat up. So if you're riding the Divide in 2025 and you're planning on doing it rigid, whether you're doing it on a gravel bike or a mountain bike, fully rigid mountain bike, even if you have suspension on the front of your bike, I think that a suspension stem would be beneficial for taking up some of the little stuff. Fork takes the big stuff. Suspension stem takes the little stuff. And then you've got something like 20, 25 mil of travel under your ass to take up that stuff. So can't recommend it enough. And if you drop the code MB40, you're going to save 15%. So check out redshiftsports.com. Use the code MB40 to save money. All right, guys, let's get to the podcast. In this podcast, I'm speaking with Nathan Siemens, probably I don't know how many times that dude has been on this podcast in the past. Whenever we say Lost Elephant, we drink. So whenever you listen to a podcast with Nathan Siemens, you have to have a beer or a whiskey or a gin, something beside you, so that when we say Lost Elephant, you take a drink. This is like an old kind of like, I don't know who started that meme, but, you know, whenever I say, Lost Elephant, or, you know, you can even apply that to the Tour Divide. You know, I've done a few things, bikepacking races in my day, but they all tend to be BC local. So we only have the AR 700, which is coming back. Look into it. BC Epic, the Buckshot, the Lost Elephant races. But anyway, Nathan has been on the podcast a number of times, and those of you who have ever received an email from Nathan, who's basically the communicator for the group of people that put on the Lost Elephant ride, you'll know that he has a great sense of humor and very tongue-in-cheek. And we have a great conversation in this podcast about this ride that's coming up this winter, this February, called Cold Ride. It's going to be a winter ultra event, and it's being organized by Dean Dahl, who's the founder of Have a Good Ride. So now this is a bit of a departure. So most bikepacking races are free. You show up, you race. If you're the winner, you usually get in the middle of the night and there's no one around, and you basically celebrate by yourself, give yourself a high five. Maybe you'll have a beer in your frame bag you can drink to celebrate, and then go home and go to bed. In this case, they want to make it, when you pay for an event, not only is it supported, but it's organized in such a way that it really brings the community together. And, it's really, and it's not that expensive. And those details are to come in the future. I don't know if we reveal any of those details in this podcast, but I'm just going to read their about page so you get an idea of what they're about. Good times doing good things. Getting out there doing things you love brings so many positives to you and your community. Our Good Ride team is so excited to provide adventures that challenge your personal best alongside great people. Sharing an adventure is extra special when it helps people. All our events are serve-centered, offering fundraising and service projects embedded in our events that offer real, sustainable help to those who need it. We are proud to contribute to the local community organizations with partial proceeds donated and fundraising opportunities at our events. So it was really great to connect with Nathan and Dean and talk about these events that are coming up and events that are happening in the future. And I'm not going to talk anymore because I've talked enough. So without further delay, I bring you Nathan Siemens and Dean Dahl.
Hey there, Steve.
Hey, is this Dean? Hang on, I gotta get back to the... Oh, there you go. How's it going?
Good.
See these? My first pair of readers.
Ah, oh, nice.
No, it's not nice. Since I'm getting old.
I got an older reader in here.
So. Yeah, it's disturbing. A little bit. Yeah. Getting old.
I know, it's frustrating. It's like a little slap in the face, eh? It's like, it's not just like... it's not just like typical soreness. It's just like, oh, now I can't read stuff.
Yeah, I was down in, I just got back from Moab. I was down riding bikes with my girlfriend, and we were in this Army. I'm just adjusting some levels here. We were in an Army surplus place, and they had these $2 readers, and Tabitha's like, oh, look at that. Got some readers. Why don't you get some readers or $2? And I put them on, and I was just like, holy shit. Like, I'm...
Yep.
And I've had laser surgery.
Ah.
So I think it's just the eye aging thing. I think that's all it is.
Yeah. I know. I've got a distant help. My grandma had cataracts or something, and she got an operation when she was like 75.
Yeah.
And her crystal, like her vision went completely clear after that. So I'm kind of hoping that it runs in the family.
My mom just got that done too. Like she got one eye done and she's getting her other eye done pretty soon. And it's like, I don't know why they don't spend all the, I didn't get LASIK. I got, I think it's called PRK. So they, instead of opening your, cornea and blasting underneath, they just blast on top, especially if you have thin corneas. So the recovery is forever, but it's like, well, why don't you just put new lenses in? Because it's like an outpatient, it's like slit lens and then, and then you're good to go. Right. But yeah, so. I don't know. I haven't had benefits for a while. I'm getting benefits again. So I think the first thing I'm going to do is go to the eye doctor.
Yeah. It's just a weird feeling to have something operating on your eye.
Have you ever had it happen?
Early black and white. No, I've never done it.
Ugh. Yeah, it's kind of gross because they put the speculum in there, right? And they crank your eye open. And then it's like they say, okay, look at the green dot. And then... if you can't see the green dot, look for the red dot, right? And it's the dot, I think it's tracking, it's doing pupil tracking so that when it's, when it's firing at your eye, it's tracking your pupil movement so that it tracks and shoots in the right spot. Right.
Wow.
But it's like that laser you hear wind up. And then I start, so I'm laying there and I smell, it smells like burned hair because it's skin, right? Like it's just clear skin on your eye. And it's so serious in there, and I kind of like, and I'm a bit of a jokester, I suppose. I'm like, well, you should have warned me about the burning hair smell, and no one said anything. They just kind of like moved me and did the next eye, but it took a while to recover from PRK, but as soon as it recovered, it was great. It was like, because wearing glasses, snowboarding, and it's just they're always fogging up, and
yeah.
I think Nathan's having trouble connecting.
Yeah, okay. Seems like it. I know I had to reinstall Facebook and all kinds of garbage, and now all these warnings showing Facebook is running programs in the background.
Right.
Classic right. Facebook.
I wonder if Nathan could just, I wonder if he can just connect with audio. Yeah, I don't think he really wants to be that involved because he says that people are getting sick of hearing from him. But I don't think that's the case.
No. Nobody gets sick of hearing from Nathan.
No, just, right?
Maybe he's sick of hearing from all of us.
Yeah, maybe. So we've never spoken before, have we?
No, I don't think we have. Listened to a couple of your podcasts though, so that was nice.
Oh, thanks. What's your deal? What's your background? Where are you?
I'm in Chilliwack.
Okay.
So yeah, I've been here for about 5-6 years, I guess.
Yeah.
And we are. Well, I mean, I grew up in Langley, but for the last like 20 years, me, my wife, and our kids have lived in East Vancouver and North Vancouver.
Okay.
And had his parents live out in Yarrow, and we just got renovicted a couple times, and we're just like, oh man, this is a bummer. And thought, we're in Yarrow, which is a part of Chilliwack, and we just thought, oh, this would be a good opportunity. Had his parents live close by, and so we just bought a house and. Yeah, it's been good.
Nice. Look who's here.
So,
hey, I just have to go grab some headphones now. I'm on a computer instead of my phone.
That's okay.
So, yeah.
1 second.
Yeah, take your time.
Yeah, how's my audio, by the way, Steve?
It's good.
You sound good to me.
Okay.
Yeah, it's balanced. Nathan was a bit loud, but maybe we can we can figure that out.
I used to run a podcast for...
Oh, yeah?
I did one season. Have a podcast, and so I have a whole bunch of equipment like headphones and special camera and stuff like that, but I didn't think I'd need it for this.
What did you do? What was your podcast?
It's called The Edge is the Center, and I only did a limited run of them. I've worked in nonprofit for basically my whole career, and but always on the edges of, like, it's a nonprofit that works with teenagers primarily and young adults and preteens a little bit too. But I grew up skateboarding, and so I got into this organization and was, you know, they were doing a lot of volunteering in high schools and chaperoning different events and things, and I just found myself doing things that I thought were important for teenagers to be there for them, but it wasn't really my deal. And I was skating with a whole bunch of people after work in the evenings at the local park and on the streets. And half of them were like the teenagers that went to the high school I was going to volunteer or to help out, or else that had dropped out. And I was like, you know, I'm not really feeling this kind of thing, hanging out in high schools and coaching volleyball teams and things like that. But I got all these skateboarders. I got literally 30 skateboarders from all over town here. So I talked to my boss and said, hey, I'm sensing there's an opportunity here to work with some, whatever, distressed youth or youth at risk. And what do you have to say? I just ditch the high school stuff and I'll just concentrate on these skateboard kids. And my boss was like, yeah, sure, let's try it out and see where it goes. And, you know, fast forward like 17 years and it turned into like 17 different chapters across the country and Costa Rica, China, Mexico, a whole bunch of other places around the world that we kind of found, you know, groups of skateboarders in and ran clubs and skate camps and things. So anyways, I did that for a long time and I learned a lot about kind of subcultures and anti-cultures and weird little corners of teen culture. And so I had all these really cool ideas in my head that would be so great, I thought, to write down. But after a while, I thought, if I wrote a book, I probably would never read it. So why should I expect anybody else to? So I just thought, I'll just do a podcast and, you know, share some of my ideas and talk to people that I'd met that were really interesting over the years. So that was the podcast.
Is it still out there? Is it on Spotify?
Yeah, it's on
Apple?
Spotify.
Well, yeah.
It's been a couple of years since I did it. It's called The Edges of the Center.
Yeah, I just wrote it down. Edges of Center. And dealing with Nathan, you just sit there and listen for a while, okay?
Yeah, good. Can you hear me though? Am I sounding good?
Sounds great. Yeah, good levels. Yeah.
Yeah, the idea of it is that in my experience working particularly with young people, but specifically in action adventure sports, the edge always influences the center. Like the edge of culture always draws in the middle of, you know, the average person. The average person never draws in the edge, or they hardly ever do. That really creative person might be isolated because they have not really a whole lot of friends that do what they do, but they do something so unique and do it so creatively that it attracts people to say, oh, that's amazing. What's going on there? I want to know about that. And it's about that, whether it's architecture, skateboarding, snowboarding, any action adventure sport, or art or housing, just people that are doing weird things often find themselves isolated. But at the same time, they're having a massive influence on the people. So
that's a really cool concept. I dig that. I'm gonna check it out. And my podcast, if you listen to it, it's pretty informal. Like, I don't usually introduce the guests until
it's fine.
Monologue.
I like it. It's a good casual feel. It's a very relational, conversational.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Yeah. But your last name's pronounced Dahl, like Dean Dahl.
Yeah, Dahl.
Dahl.
Yeah. Like Roald Dahl.
Roald Dahl. That's really cool. That's a really cool concept. And it's funny too. I think also it probably draws, it probably influences those kids. Are you dealing with mostly teenagers when you were that, like in art?
Yeah, primarily. That's where it kind of started. But I found pretty quickly when you work with a teenager, you're actually working with their siblings and you're working with their parents and you're working with their social worker or their teachers. So my ability, I don't work for that organization anymore. Right. I found pretty quickly that to do effective work with young people, you can't just do work with young people. You have to do work with the city hall. You have to do work with the community centers, the different religious groups that are around, churches or temples or whatever, and their friends and the corner store they're all hanging out with. Once you identify all those things and do like have good relationships with them, then you're able to work with that specific teenager or that group. So Yeah. So anyways,
well, people should check it out, cause I'm going to check it out. And then who knows, maybe there'll be this big influx of traffic and you'll be inspired to do it more. It's, you know, yeah. What? It's a lot of work, isn't it?
It is. It's tons of work.
Mine. I think that's why I keep mine pretty cash, because
I think you're onto it, because if you, the more formal, like I did it pretty formal. So I'd introduce my guests. A lot of my guests were like, you know, pretty significant professors. Like this one guy is a architect who studied skateboarding architecture around the world. He's a doctor at a university in England, things like that. So I'd have to formally announce them. I have to do my, all my fact checking and my research. And it was just exhausting. So, what you got is in conversation, it's so much easier.
Have you listened?
I mean, it's not easy, but it's more simple.
It is more simple. Have you listened to Dirtbag Diaries? Like that level of production that they...
No.
Well, it's kind of like, it's almost like storytelling. So they'll introduce and then there'll be small snippets from the guest or the subject. And then the host will chime in with some narrative and then they'll go back to another, like, yeah. It's like a CBC.
A lot of CBC episodes are like that too.
Yeah. Super. What's it? Minds. What is it called? Something Minds. The CBC podcast, but
Ideas.
Yeah, that's right. And I just couldn't, like, I used to edit really heavily as well. And I used to go out, like we'll have an hour or two conversation and I would actually go through and listen to it again and edit things out, like mostly me.
Yeah.
but just from doing the editing process, I've learned to, I guess, more, I mean, this is not, what's happening now, but keep my mouth shut more and try to listen more and try to let the guest take the space and give them the space to speak.
Yeah. There's a real art to it. Hey, eh?
That's why I have a handheld mic because I just pull it away. Cause if it were in front of my face, I think it invokes me to want to, and I think there's that thing too, where you always want to fill the dead space.
Yeah, it's true. You know, the dead space is the best though, because it forces the other person to take the initiative and actually start talking, and then they just go off, right?
Or if I've had conversations with my coach Seb, and Sebastian Roland is an amazing guy, and you'll ask him a question, and he would just it would just be dead air, right? But it's like that. I think that
wise.
It builds tension. He really thinks about what he's going to say first before he speaks, and I try to do that because I sometimes I just say shit and then go back in and edit that out. That sounded stupid.
Yeah.
Write down the time.
One of my secret weapons for my podcast, by the way, is my nephew was doing some YouTube videos for some startup in LA, and he had some extra time on his hands. So I learned how to use the script, and I got him to learn how to use the script as well, which is like a audio to, it just translates.
Or transcripts.
But he did all my editing for me. It was so good. Just saved so much time, but
yeah, I let it run. And oftentimes I just put it out there. People are like, hey, remember that conversation you had last year with that person, blah blah blah, and I'm like, no, I don't. I've had so many conversations I can barely remember them, which is really sad. Another case of ADHD. Hey Nathan, check this out, look what I have. I was showing Dean, look what I have now.
Come on. I feel so unprepared without my glasses.
Yeah, we're talking about laser surgery.
Well, I assume
and
we're just
stuff.
On audio, so no one, unless I wrinkle the glasses, no one's gonna know.
So, yeah. So Nathan Siemens, thanks for joining me again. People love hearing from you, so don't be shy. Like, talk.
Hold on, I gotta get my water. Hold on.
Okay.
I was biking with Dean and a friend of his a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, we talked about this podcast, and I said, I'm pretty sure that Steve banned me last time for being on too much.
No, never. No, never. No, you have too much.
Yeah. So I apologize in advance to everyone who's sick of my voice. And I apologize to you for hogging all your airtime.
No, this happens at a really good, the summer. I've already put up a bit of verbiage out about summer was really weird and filled with activity for me. So I was kind of worried that people were thinking that I wasn't doing the podcast anymore. I've just been so been adventuring. I've been like going on paddleboarding trips and so this is great timing because it's fall. It's time to start getting into, you know, cozy mode and starting to have more conversations with people. And I've only ever done one other a three-way conversation in the past.
Was with us. That was with me, but it wasn't virtual.
Was it you? Oh, then this isn't.
Well, No, but you did Eric and I in your backyard.
Oh, yeah, no, virtual.
Yeah. Oh, okay, virtual.
Yeah, the backyard one. I don't even think that one ever went out, to be honest.
Yeah, it did.
Did it? There was another one I had that did, that didn't go out, and I can't remember. Very, very rarely.
Steve, what's your percentage of podcasts that you you just look at and go, ah, it's not going to work?
You know what? I've Doug Dunlop. I was just hanging out with Doug today, and we had a conversation, and it was pretty long. But he had a lot of we reconnected. He had a lot of stuff going on in his life. His mom was having some trouble at the time, and he had just scratched from the Silk Road, and there was just a lot of stuff going on for him. So the conversation didn't go very well, and I felt really bad because I don't like wasting people's time. Right. So I reached out to Doug and I was like, you know what, man, I think we can do better. And he agreed. He was like, yeah, I just wasn't there. So we did another one. A fraction of a percent. Generally, I mean, I think because they're conversational, and like, for instance, you and I had never met, and we're here to talk about Cold Ride, which we're going to talk about in a second. But then I learned this background, really cool stuff about you and about your podcast. And it's like, that's what I love. It's like, because I wouldn't even have asked. Like, we just kind of stumbled through that that territory. Yeah. And that's awesome. Like, that's a podcast in and of itself. We could talk about
it. Yeah, sure. So have you guys already done the full intro of Dean and everyone knows exactly who Dean is now?
Dean from Chilliwack, had a podcast. What do you do now what's your day job now? You're still working with youth?
Well, I can go into this as we get further into our conversation, but I'm actually developing events like Cold Ride as a business / social enterprise.
Cool.
And so I've got Cold Ride, and I have Good Ride Gravel, which is in Chilliwack. It happens on May 10th next year.
Cool.
And then I'm also developing a couple other races that I have in the hopper for next summer as well. So it's basically kind of a social enterprise. It's meant to be a business that's also very community focused and right on the edge of being a nonprofit, but not in the nonprofit world.
Mm-hmm.
Basically working around action adventure sport communities and building events that foster community rather than just showing up and doing your thing and going home.
Yeah, like the stuff Nathan does, right?
Kidding. Yeah. the funny thing there is when this idea of Cold Ride came to me, I was terrified as soon as I started thinking about like having to get, I don't know, insurance or like the rights to use the roads, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then as I was spiraling out of control in my little brain that gets caught up in the minutiae, I remembered, wait, Dean's doing Good Ride this year. So he hadn't done it yet. And so I was watching it from afar as he's putting it together and doing that. And he had lots of, he'd done other rides, like organized events before, and that from the outside looking in were super successful. And so I'm like, I'm just going to hit him up. And it was pretty awesome because, it just sort of came out of left field that he was going down this route. And I didn't actually know he was going down this route to be like, you know what, I want to really try my hand at more of these events. I thought he was just doing Good Ride Gravel and that was going to be the end. And so when I hit him up saying I have this wacky idea, we'd talked about even just getting together for rides. We'd brainstormed all sorts of like, I don't know, pie in the sky ideas of ways we could make a living off of leading people on rides, stuff like that. But it never went much further. So this was like, yes, this is something with actual legs and teeth that could work very easily, both with his ability to cross the I's and dot the T's and my ability to come up with wacky ideas. And it just like, as soon as you start talking about it, it's like, this has something. So
what are some of the challenges taking an event from grassroots to something with teeth? Like you had mentioned insurance, access rights, stuff like that. Like, how complicated does it make?
We talked about it before, but I'm sure a lot of your listeners know about like the Active Epica, which is that winter race in Manitoba that Andy and Eric and Darren Madley and I all took part in. There's other people, obviously, but those are the people I know. I went there, and it was the first time I'd like paid money for an event. And I'm like, oh, this is why people pay money for events, because this is awesome. It was run really well. It was super fun, super, like the community there was amazing. Like we drove across the country, missed the best snow year or snow weekend that Fernie and Kimberly got to go ride bikes in southern Manitoba. Like how dumb was that? And so, but it was the best weekend, like the whole drive home. We were chatting, obviously, Andy and Eric and I on our big 18-hour drive or whatever it was. But my mind, unbeknownst to them, maybe, I don't know, was going a million miles an hour of how do we bring that to the Western Canada? And obviously, how do we bring that to Cranbrook? Because that's where I am. And Cranbrook's the center of the universe, so everyone needs to come here. And as soon as I started thinking about like trying to do it Lost Elephant style, everything started like, nope, that's going to be too much. That's going to be too much. Like all of a sudden I had to be like, no, this has to be a proper event. Like this has to be like one where we get the correct permissions. Mm. We can't just send a bunch of people through through like groomed trails that are being maintained by someone else and destroy their trails in one day, right? We can't be throwing a bunch of people on these one-way gravel, narrow logging roads, not knowing if active logging is happening that day. Like that's so irresponsible. And that's when it, essentially, to be honest, I was like, okay, I'm out. Mm. Like it was just too much for my brain to think about, because again, I get caught up in minutia. I get caught up in, okay, how do we do this? How do we do that? How do we do this? Where the Lost Elephant, honestly, Andrew draws a route. I give him a bunch of dumb ideas and he says they're stupid and he makes it better. I send a bunch of funny emails and that's all I have to do. Like, obviously that's not true. Like I talk to sponsors, like get that barbecue thing going the night before, but it's really very little stress for me, because if it doesn't go right, I don't care. Mm-hmm. Right. If it doesn't go right, no one's thrown money at me. No one is on the hook for anything. It's just people got like-minded people gathering for a fun ride in the woods to challenge themselves. And it's gained what it's gained just because of that community. Obviously, our in air quotes board of directors has a lot to do with why it's become what it is, because of our attitudes, our way of looking at things. But we're not willing, like if someone says we're not allowed to ride somewhere, we'll be like, okay, we just won't ride there. We're not going to like try and figure out how to ride there. It's just like, okay, we'll just change it. And not where if you're going to send a bunch of people in the winter somewhere, it gets a little sketchier. So I started like comparing what else is out there. And they're all like all the winter ultra fat bike stuff is all paid races. And I get it now. Like already, just in ideating this race, I've probably put in three times as many hours already as I do to an elephant all year. And it's just, I'm like, okay, that's great. And then my big fear was that people would think it is a Lost Elephant related event, and it's not. So I want to be 100% sure, transparent. This is not a Lost Elephant event.
What do you mean when you say that? Like, what's the contrast?
Well, the Lost Elephant is its own entity. This is the cold ride. It's a totally different thing. I asked the locals for their blessing, because that's just one of my fears is stepping on toes or coming in as an imposter. So I asked guys like Eric, Andrew, James, McKee, hey, here's an idea I have. Is this going to piss you guys off? And they were, every one of them, not just those guys, but everybody I've talked to, yes, dive in, go for it. We're behind you 100%. And so this is me and Dean under the Good Ride banner putting on an event. So this, yes, I'm the cheerful little cherub cheeked face of
communications officer. You're the communications.
Yeah, communications officer of the Lost Elephant. And I most likely will be the communications officer of Cold Ride. So there will obviously be the same vibe and feeling to it, but it's not the same. Lost Elephant's not changing. Lost Elephant will be what it is, but this is a whole different entity.
That's cool. So speak more to that, Dean, if you want to pipe in and talk more about that.
Yeah, I guess the question you're asking, Steve, is how do you kind of, I guess, essentially, how do you level up an event and how do you make it more legit? Well, I find the question is actually two-sided because it's not easy, but once you get used to it, it's actually, there's some simplicity to formalizing an event. But in the ease that it takes once you learn how to formalize events, there becomes an issue or a challenge, and one of them is that it very quickly does not want to become grassroots anymore because it becomes so formal, so structured. The insurance says this, the permitting says this, you know, you all have to do this, you get accredited with different leagues or communities or whatever, and all of a sudden it feels like, oh man, I gotta do everything, I've gotta sign up a certain way, I can't go unless I've done this and this and this and this. So I find the challenge is both. How do you legitimize something that's really cool to make it so that people feel safe? They feel like it's an actual event that they can go to and feel good about. But also, how do you bring back that community feel into it so it still feels like, oh yeah, all my friends are here. Mm. Or I came here by myself because I love doing this event. It's so fun, but I don't know anybody that does this. I just bought this bike. I hope I meet somebody here. And to be able to say to that person, yeah, I guarantee you, you'll have like 5 friends after this weekend and it's going to be amazing. That's probably even harder than the legitimizing of it. You know, there's a pretty simple checklist that you can find just from even your community. You call City Hall and they'll give you a rundown that says, hey, if you want to do an event in our city, let's say Cranbrook, here's who you should talk to. Here are the permit people you need. Here's how you do traffic control. This is the kind of insurance you need, and just a few phone calls can get you all that stuff, and then you just check the boxes. It's not that easy, but you know, those are the kind of things. So you can set up this strong structure, and again, that is really important because, like I said before, people do want to feel safe when they come to an event. We're running an event that's in the middle of winter. It's going to be on FSRs and on trails. People are going to be by themselves in the woods at some points. And there's always going to be someone that comes that has never really done this before, but they've always wanted to. And I don't want them going into this feeling like they've gone so far over their head that they're actually really nervous or they need to, you know, we need to make an emergency call for them. So there's a whole bunch of things that allow them to feel safe, but also allow them to feel like this is a structured event that's a bit beyond that, just a bunch of people creating something. And we might get into this a little bit later too, but there is a sharp end to fat bike riding, just like there is to gravel racing, to road biking, to skateboarding. There's people that have committed their lives to in the season of their life they're in to be able to do this sport and to see how far they can go with it. And so we really want to honor that too and create a feel for those people that says, you know, I could actually do this and make enough money that it could pay my expenses or even pay me a little bit more so that I could see how far up the chain in this event, this passion that I have, how far can I go with it? And so we even often offer podium prizes for our events, cash podium prizes, because you know, if somebody comes from Calgary or from Prince George or from, I don't know, somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, and they've spent like 2 years working on fat biking events and they're spending all their money, I want to honor that to be able to say, hey, yeah, there's a cash prize. And that just kind of legitimizes the sport for them. So that's kind of speaking into that legitimacy. And then on the other hand, the other challenge with it is that I don't want it to just be a race. I don't want this to be a thing where, you know, all these governing bodies all show up and people only can do this, you know, check the boxes this way. and feel like, oh, you know, this is a good formal time, but now I have to go, or I can't go to this part of it. I really want it to feel like a gathering of people that have a, you know, a common understanding of the world and their place in it, and want to have a great time and want to get to know people and want to be able to use the passion that they have in for this, in this case, fat biking, and ask the question, well, hey, we're all part of this. How can we give back as people that love this sport? You know, what can we do in the community? What can we do for each other? How can we build up young people into this? How can we, you know, make it a more diverse thing that more people can enjoy? So it's a double challenge for me to figure out how to, on the one hand, make this feel more legitimate, and on the other hand, how to make this feel more grassroots. And they work together, but they often, you know, they're challenging each other at the same time.
I think there's an the concept of accessibility as well. And I'm sure, Nathan, I'm sure you've heard the comments. Doug and I were just talking about it today. The Lost Elephant is really hard, right? Like they've always been really, really, really challenging. And I think it's to the point where I think some people are maybe afraid, right, to do it. And if I've ridden it, I don't know how many times, 3 times, different routes all the time. Maybe I think it's about that many times. And yeah, when I did the ITT, I was terrified, to be honest, because I was the only person riding it, except for some guy touring it. Aaron Weinsheimer was touring it at the time. But it's like, it definitely pushes you sometimes into a place where a lot of people aren't used to being in the woods at night, plugging holes in their tires, in the rain, in the dark, you know, lost, and like things like that. And I think that even though I think people should do that, people should expose themselves to that, because I think it makes us realize just how capable we all are. I think some people have commented that the Lost Elephants are getting a little bit bananas, like a little bit crazy, a little bit hard, and it might be scaring some people away. Have you heard some of that feedback?
Well, hey, I'm taking off my cold ride hat and putting on my Lost
Elephant. Oh yeah, I didn't want to change focus, but it kind of plays into
This is something that I don't know. We haven't talked since then, have we? You and I.
I don't think so.
So I actually got a lot of very pointed comments
along those lines.
And I don't
think
people are trying to be hurtful to me, or if it was just me being a easily hurt person sometimes, but I took it to heart. Yeah. Like there were some people being like, too many alders. It was too rough. It was too abusive. And I was like, oh, like, what have we done? Like, and I was like, actually, like, even right now, talking about right now, my heart is a little bit like,
I didn't mean to bring it up.
Like, it hurt a little. It was weird. And the funny thing is, the alders this year are my favorite thing. They are truly, like, I have a friend who, when he saw a video, he said to himself, Nathan is having the best time out there right now.
Yeah.
Because those alders. But anyways, but then you know what started coming in? Right after those sort of like, it was too hard comments, was just the most like biggest pats on the back we've ever had for an event.
Yeah.
So many people saying, I'm sorry, that was the best, that was the best route yet. That was my favorite one. And then Darren Madley said, because I actually responded to him saying, thank you so much. You don't know how much that means to me. And he said, and it's so funny that I say me, because I try so hard not for it to be my event, but I do take it sort of personally. Yeah. But I think that's just my heart on my sleeve type way of being. So Darren sent me a thing and I said, thanks so much. And he just said, no, you guys keep doing what you want to do. Yeah. No one's paying to come there. You've not told them it was easy. If you want to set a route, you set the route you want to do.
I agree with Darren.
And I started laughing at myself because I was like, when you look at the, again, quote unquote, board of directors, every one of us rides a hardtail mountain bike with 130 millimeters of suspension on the front, 2.4 to 2.6 inch tires on the burlier side of tires. So if you're coming to one of our events, maybe do your
research.
research.
You commented when I finally put suspension on Timber, you were like, oh, it kind of looks like a Kootenai adventure bike now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it like, is.
And so it was that. And I think I might have included some of what Darren said in one of my group emails. I'm just like, no, you know what? Darren is right. So I'm coming out right now and saying it. Next year's Lost Elephant is going to be significantly harder than the 2024 route.
Yeah.
And if anyone shows up with a gravel bike, that's on them.
Mm.
Like, I ran into Jocelyn, who got second in the jumbo and is the most phenomenal cyclist and bike handler. He was probably I might hurt some feelings here. He's probably the best bike handler on the course. And he's on drop bars, rigid.
Yeah.
And he said, I wish I would have brought my mountain bike.
That says a lot.
Good. Thank you, Jocelyn.
Yeah. And
then he went.
It's second. It's all subjective, right? Like
a
couple of the routes that times I've done it, like, you know, years back, that bushwhack, I almost took my pedals off. Right.
Yeah.
I almost got the tools that would take the pedals off just so I could get through the woods. 'Cause it was so annoying. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you look at the, anyway, you know what you're signing in up to.
Yeah.
Like, you're signing up for something really difficult. And, but that's all I'm saying. I would agree with what Darren said.
Yeah.
I think the challenge and the difficulty, and it's been going on long enough now that people could research it and there's going to be pushing.
The other beauty lots of walking. Was I ran into this lady, young lady from Kimberley, and I talked to her on the night before, and she said, this is my first ever event. And when people say that, I get like this, like, oh. And then I ran into her like weeks later at like the little hippie grocery store here in town. I'm like, oh, hey, congratulations. I haven't seen you. Because she was essentially the Lantern Rouge on the Dumbo. And she's like, yeah, it was good. Like, she really enjoyed it. She finished the event. And then she said, but I got last. And I'm like, no, you didn't. You beat every one of those big names that dropped out. There were fast people, and you beat them. You beat every last one of them because you finished.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that scratching's bad. I've scratched more than I've started on my events. But when she sort of thought of it that way, she's like, right. Because she just persevered. She pushed her bike up and over every one of those things. She probably pushed her bike down a lot of those things. So, yeah. And so the beauty of that is she dove in, right? She tried something new and she came out the other side like, I did it.
Yeah.
And she heard all the chatter about how hard it was, and she did it. And that's where I'm going to segue professionally into back to talking
about Cool Guy. Yeah, I want to go back.
is that I was... So we went and did the Active Epica, that group of us. And one of Andy's quotes on the way back was, that was so much fun, blah, 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 such a great ride. Everything about this event was amazing. But that did not prepare us for the Iditarod, right?
Mm.
And because it's an Iditarod qualifier.
Oh, it is.
Active Epica.
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, yeah. So that's going on in my mind while I'm also thinking about what event I would like to put. So in my mind, I was like, let's just make the most brutal pushing your bike up and down through knee-deep snow type ride ever. And then through talking with Dean, I realized that is just such a tiny little subculture that would be willing or wanting to do that. And it was so, it's almost arrogant to be like, this is our little group and you can't be in it unless it's hard, unless you can be so hard.
Right.
And so this one's not going to be that. This one's going to push you. And who knows, the weather might dump a meter and a half of snow and that'll push you. But as it is, if it's a clear sailing day, it's going to be a pretty fast route. Very, very little walking. I can't say no walking.
Yeah, you can.
Very little. And it's going to be that event that, so if you're that person that goes and does the 12K loop once a week at your local fat bike groomed trails, sign up for that 55 and you're going to come out the other end of that day and be so proud of what you accomplished, right? You're just going to be, wow, that was a big day. That was hard. 55 kilometers, almost 1,000 meters climbing. Like, wow, I feel gassed and I feel good about myself. But if you're that person that, you know, might do a BC Epic or the Buckshot or even the Lost Elephant, or you're riding your 12-kilometer loop 4 times a week. Sign up for that 135 and you'll have a day. Like, it'll be, you'll get home and be like, I really, really accomplished something, right? And so we want it to be accessible, but not, but at the same time where you'll feel like proud of yourself at the end, right? You want to, you want people to go home and maybe fall asleep as their loved one is driving them home and just be like so white. But then 2 days later when they're sitting at their desk, as I do, that's all they can think about. They're not doing work at work anymore. They're just thinking about that ride they did last weekend. So yeah, that's sort of the goal. I'm not trying to make it brutal. There's no brutal in this one. All the brutality got sort of talked out of me. Who knows, maybe down the road there'll be like a Cold Ride XL that'll test that sort of type of rider. But as of right now, like the Andy Wards, his name keeps coming up, so worry, but he will just go there and pedal hard and fast and get it done quickly. He's not going to be tested in that same way he'd be tested on some of his solo rides, to be completely honest. But he'll be out there racing against other fast people, which is going to give him that that fire, right? And in a way, I like the idea of it being a fast course with single track mixed in. And that's what it is. It's a fast course for 70% of it, with 30% being playful technical single track. So
cool.
So I don't know if that answered a question or if there even was a question.
It did, because I was leaning into accessibility, right? So like if you're gonna have people pay money for an event, then they want to be, I mean, you want to, you're delivering a product, right? You're delivering something that people want to participate in and feel accomplished in, push themselves in, and get some value back. You know, it's important.
Yeah, for sure.
Where people don't I think expectations like that are a lot lower for an event that you don't pay for. So, so Dean, why don't you break down the structure of the Cold Ride, like the different distances, et cetera.
Yeah, I was just going to say that we should talk about the specifics of it. Well, we have two routes, and Nathan's going to be more specifically responsible to guide the route prep and things. I live in the Lower Mainland, so I'm not going to be on the ground as much as Nathan will be. So I'm doing a lot more from a kind of more general background, making sure everything's good, and Nathan's a little bit more on the ground working on the specific details. But we've got two routes. The Freezy is the 55. That's one of the ones that Nathan was talking about. 55 kilometers and about 870 meters of elevation. And then we've got the Big Chill, which is our feature ride, our big one. Although, you know, they're both going to be features depending on who you are. It's going to be 130 kilometers and about 1700 meters of elevation. And what Nathan said, it's a mix between FSRs and single track, and a couple other spicy bits added in there. Nathan, you got anything more that you want to add about specifics to the course?
Well, the beauty is when I approached James McKee about this, so I don't know if you've probably met him in passing, Steve, but he's our local trail groomer, sort of trail guru he essentially established fat biking here in Cranbrook. When I asked his blessing, because it was going to be his trails that we were going to be wrecking for the day, he got so excited about a couple of the little connectors that didn't make sense to me. He's like, oh yeah, no, I'll go groom those up and make them real good. So he's all excited to connect like some of the different FSR sections that don't really have a clear connection at the moment. So it's pretty sweet. He got really excited about that. And I know Eric Ross has ridden all of these roads in the winter. I've ridden a fair amount of them. Again, if it's been heavily trafficked with logging trucks and we haven't had snow for 2 weeks, it's going to be fast.
Yeah.
But it could be not fast too, as fat bikes can be. And I got to hand it to Dean. He sent me a text saying, what do you think about Freezy and Big Chill for names? And I just giggled out loud. I'm like, yep, good, perfect. Sort of like I think the Dumbo and the Jumbo came out of Andrew's head without even him thinking too. So you just surround people with smarter people than your, sorry. Surround yourself with smarter people than yourself.
And it's collaborative. You'll be okay. Yeah.
But yeah. And so
My favorite thing about this route is the fact that there's a groomer, like a fat bike trail groomer. Like I just want to see what that looks like. I want to try it out and see. Like, I don't know if there's other interpretations of what a fat bike grooming.
No, it's pretty established now.
Get the what I'd have to say about that is having ridden a couple of the I lost the name of it. The one up at Nipica, Cross River Ripper.
Yeah.
If you're going to be riding groomers, get the whole shot because after like the third person, it's wrecked. Like it's, and I'm not saying that, you know, James will probably, he'll be out there probably pissing water on it, right? to harden it up. Who knows? But I just remember the second Cross River I did, I ended up behind, I can't remember their names. Damn it. Jenna and
Dylan. And Ryan?
Yeah. Jenna.
Oh. I know.
Yeah, and I got third into the single track behind them, which I shouldn't have been there for one, but it was great because I had great single track. And then for every person behind, it was just got worse and trenched and like.
Yeah.
And then second lap, because I think it was it a 50 or 25? I can't remember, but second lap was just
it was a 20.
You had to have technical bike skills.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't. Yeah. You were there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you had to have skills because as soon as you started going into the descents and you're in a trench.
Yeah.
Right. It was so hard. Yeah. Yeah. But
groomers are fun. Actually, that's a funny story. That's where we met.
Yeah. I remember vaguely. Yeah. I was kind of, you know what? I was intimidated by you guys.
Group
of Cranbrook guys.
Yeah. It actually brings up a bit of a technical thing about our route is it starts with about 5K of pavement. And the first little bit, actually, Dean and I were just talking about this today, is probably going to be a neutral rollout just to get us through a couple of the stop signs.
Yeah.
So everyone, just like when you see on the old Tour de France, how they sort of leave town altogether and then the pace car just peels away and lets them at it. It starts with will probably be about 900 meters to 1500 meters of neutral rollout. And then it goes into like a long sort of pavement climb to get everyone to fight for their position. Cause it's a long climb. Like it'll probably be a 10 minute climb type thing. So it'll give all the guys that are chomping at the bit, the guys and gals up there that are just going to rip legs, they can have a chance to get up there. And the rest of us mere mortals, although I don't get to ride it, will be, you know, just chilling their way in. And then, so there won't be that fight for whole shot. It won't have that cross country mountain bike race vibe that the Cross River Ripper had. It'll very much more be like, okay, we're in it now. This is a day. Got to pace ourselves. I actually found the Active Epica was funny because I was in the toilet. And so was, no, sorry. Yeah, I just got out of the toilet and he was in the toilet. I walked out and they're gone. I missed the whole like,
hi.
Hey, thanks for coming out, guys. This is great. And so I jumped on my bike and I'm flooring it, trying to catch up. I'm like, wait, what am I doing? So I just chilled out, like passed about 10 people. Then I'm like, wait, what are you doing? Chill out, buddy. You have no right being up here. And then 25 minutes later, it sort of felt like it's probably only 4 or 5 minutes. Andy comes flying by, but that race all started like straight into like these little bike paths, and like it was really tight. I was like, holy crap, I felt like so much stress. And like, so when we talked about that, doing a neutral rollout, I'm like, that's a good idea, just sort of
chill,
get people to chill and then go.
Yeah,
it's fun. I do that for the Good Ride in May too, out in Chilliwack here, and it's really cool to do that because there's a, again, back to the community feel of it. When you're on the start line, you know, and the MC gets on the mic and he starts making announcements, you're starting to get the jitters, like, oh yeah, we're on the start line, it's good. I wonder if I'm in the right gear and things like that. So there's that really fun anticipation, and then when the horn goes or the shot goes and everybody's off, that's a great moment. And being able to have a neutral rollout means that you get to have two moments, because you have that moment of leaving the start finish line. People are cheering you on. It's like, yeah, this is amazing. And then you roll out, but you're not rolling out super fast. You're just still with all your friends and you're just getting to know each other, be like, yeah, this is going to be a great day. And you're still on the course, but you're there together as a large group, almost like a parade, right? Yeah. And you get to do this chill little thing, get your legs moving again. And then the whatever it's going to be, our lead vehicle will drop out and the flag will drop and then it's off. And then you get that moment again where it's like, okay, it's on. Let's do this. So I like it. It's a good kind of a staggered start. Mm-hmm. And again, it just builds that extra little funness that, hey, I can get to know somebody at the beginning of the race and, hey, I'll talk to you later. See you at the end of the race kind of thing, right?
Yeah, no, it sounds cool. And is it February 1st?
Yeah, February 1st. Yeah. I got your text. So yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, I'm off that weekend.
One cool thing too, this is something I've been loving about partnering with Dean, who is the type of like that roadie type that wears tight clothes and likes headwinds and
shaver. He's a shaver.
As soon as there's like some sort of like long straight stretch, it's like, okay, pizza see you cutters. Later, Dean. So he's got these really cool ideas, like the neutral rollout, right? Which is very common in road biking. And then I've got this, like the dirtbag bike packer / fat biking thing. I'm gonna straight up him getting excited about the groomer brings up this story that I've been loving sharing about him. I've told so many people this and he rolls his eyes every time I say it, but we were talking
about rolling my eyes now.
I know the day coming. And what it could be, right? And then in saying it, I'm like, well, it should be good unless it snows like, you know, a meter and a half, or you know, if it gets super hot, like 3 degrees. And he just like dead silence. And being from the Fraser Valley, Greater Vancouver, he's like, did you just say super hot and 3 degrees in the same sentence?
Warm, dude, above zero. Are you kidding me?
True.
And so, I'm
not going to say like, what my limits to how cold I'll ride in is.
Yeah.
when your eyes really start cool sticking together, that's about.
Yeah. Which is 10 degrees.
We just come from like, we have such like these interesting sort of different ideas of cycling that are coming together and creating really fun ideas. And it's like, you know, he's bringing the event into it and I'm bringing the, again, I don't know, the, whatever their term there is for dirtbag into it. And so it's just becoming this sort of funny mix of like professionalism mixed with throw caution to the wind. And
well,
so
what's even cooler, Nathan, is that you and I have a backstory in skateboarding as well.
Yeah.
And so that's even another layer that's really fun. And if you're listening and you're a skateboarder, you totally know what it's like to be at a skate event. And just the cool vibe that goes on at a skate event and how it totally dissolves all that formality and makes it really cool and chill and intense at the same time. So
yeah,
that's the one I really appreciate hanging out with you for this event too, is Nathan, that we've both been to all those skate events, everything from Slam City Jam in Vancouver to who knows what contest or what skate jam or whatever.
Yeah.
So we get the idea of, it's a contest. Yeah, it's an event, but yeah, let's do this right. You know, let's bring the skate into this.
Yeah, it sounds fun. It sounds fun.
As soon as you said that, it made me think of the Slam City Jam where I stayed at your house for it, actually. And so there's all the biggest named pros in the world. And then all of a sudden, Dave Carney comes out in a unitard and like treats himself like the skateboard and is like hump sliding every rail in the whole place. In a white unitard with no skateboard anywhere near him. And it's like, yep, that guy is on the pro, I guess he's skateboarding. Sure. But like, that's the thing. Like there's a bit of inherent thumbing my nose at everything in everything I do, which comes across in any of my art or any of my writing stuff that you if you've ever received an email from the Lost Elephant, there's an inherent, yeah, anti-everythingness to it, which is sort of fun.
So you're trying to Cold Ride's gonna be a bit punk rock then, is what you're saying?
Well,
yeah, a little bit. We're gonna do it right, and again, like, we should probably balance the equation here by saying I love, like, my personality is, I just love being able to bring a bunch of people together and have them feel like this is going to be really good. I feel comfortable. I feel that this event's going to be taken care of for me. I don't have to worry about anything. And I can see all these people in the room and they're like me. They do things or they're different than me, but I'm getting used to the fact that we're all together and we're going to have a great experience together. And that's just the, that's my biggest thrill in my life, is just being able to see that community develop. So however we can foster that, whether you're going to go for a hard day that's, you know, really going to take you out, or if it's, and you love it, or if it's going to be like just a hard day that's like, oh yeah, that was a hard day. But we want to add things too. Like Nathan and I are, again, we were talking this morning about a brunch that we want to do the day after, so that it's not just one day of a race. People show up and go home. But there's going to be people traveling here from all across Western Canada and the Northwest. And so why not throw a party? You know, why not have a chance for us to interact when we're out of our gear and we're just hanging out, having flipping pancakes together the next morning or something like that? That really speaks to, this isn't just an event. This isn't just show up, rip your legs off and go home. But this is a celebration of what we've created in the snow, that not many other people are doing this, but we are, and we're finding a bit of an identity in it. And we come as different people, but we found a common ground, and this is really cool. And now I've got like a bunch of phone numbers of people. I've got some, you know, I've been DMing all these new friends of mine. It's, I love that kind of stuff. So those kind of things is what we want to be able to bring to this event. And again, this is our first event, so we're going to be learning a lot from it. And hopefully interacting with a bunch of other fat bike events around the region as well, so that we can, you know, add value to what they do as well. We're not in this to compete with anybody else. We want to build the scene. So how can we do that?
And can you make
the idea that the brunch, so with the elephant, we always do that pre-ride barbecue or whatever it is,
right,
pre-ride get together and give out prizes there, right? But this one's a bit different because we have to have sort of like a podium. Well, we don't have to. We want to have a podium. We want to celebrate the winners as well, where the elephant, yeah, sure, we celebrate the winners afterwards, but not really, because no one's there.
Everyone finishes just goes home.
Days apart from each other.
Yeah.
And I sort of feel like this one, there will be obviously people there cheering you across the finish line and all that. But odds are the person who won is going to win by 4 or 5 hours. Right, from the last place person. There's going to be a big gap. And so I'm like, well, we can't do like the classic dinner after, because I have friends who've been to Grand Fondos and they're not slow friends, but they missed the dinner afterwards.
Right.
And they're like, we weren't anywhere close to the back, but the dinner happened and they were packing up. We didn't get the dinner we were promised. And then, but think about all the people that were, this is their first event. If you're thinking about that Grand Fondo, if that was the first event that they've ever done, they've finally ridden 110 kilometers on their road bike, and that's like the biggest thing. They're so proud. Imagine showing up and they're rolling the tents up. Like, how just, not just demoralizing, but it's almost like a slap in the face.
Yeah, especially people. If you've paid for the event. Like, I think the brunch is a great idea. Yeah.
So I'm like, well, how do we do that? Because we can't rightly, like, expect first place person to be there in their sweaty clothes and wait around for 5 hours. So like, well, people are here. Why not throw a brunch?
Yeah, but they'll just wait in their team bus, right? So they can wait in their team bus and get a massage true. While the other people roll in. Yeah,
fair. Okay, the third and fourth person. Right. People in. Yeah.
It sounds awesome, so I'm actually.
Super excited about that idea.
I was thinking about, you know, I don't know where I'll be at physically to be able to do that, but I was thinking, I'd come down and just hang out, but I think I want to ride it actually.
Well, you can just do all my rolls so that I can ride it.
No, I want to ride it. I got to ride this on my old hip before I get a new one.
Yeah. That was actually, like, this year, I really realized how much I loved the community aspect of the Lost Elephant. Yeah. And so I really made a point to try and be around as much as I could. And then so Dean, in planning Cold Ride, was saying, well, we got to figure out a way so that you can do it, right? Because I was like, oh, poor me, I don't get to ride the event. And I'm like, no, I shouldn't be riding this event because I love the interfacing with the people so much that I need to be there. I need to be there to send the people off. I need to be there to send off both distances and be there to cheer people in from both distances, because that's, like, I think it's actually coming out of my voice right now, like, how much joy that brings me.
Yeah.
And I just love seeing those people and hanging out with those people. And so it's going to pain me a bit to not be able to take part in the stories afterwards of, like, conquering old Mother Nature and showing her who's boss. But
now, is it does it loop in on itself? Like, is there kind of a point where
it's a bit cross? So we haven't released any routes yet because we're still waiting on what's the word again?
Yeah, permits.
Permits. There's the word.
I don't know this word. What do you mean?
So
yeah, I know this word. I know it
very well.
So we definitely have courses. To look at on the map, the 130, it looks a little convoluted, but it's quite straightforward. But no, it's not going to loop in on itself really at all. The 55 will share the exact same start. They'll both share the same start and the same end. The 135 goes way further out. But it'll also be a staggered start. So if you're doing the long one, you're going to start before the short one.
Right.
That way we hopefully have all the long haul, or sorry, all the big chills out there and out riding. Then the freezies go out, and the freezies will hopefully all be done by the time the winner of the big chill gets back. But just like, my dream would be that the winner of the big chill
come in at the same
will
time,
blast past a bunch of people on the freezies. Yeah.
That's cool.
Because there's something really cool about that. Like at the Active Epica, they had a couple different distances. And all of a sudden, I was just riding with all these people. I'm like, what is going on? And we were like 150 kilometers into our ride, and they were at like kilometer 30. But it was just really cool because, like, oh, there's a whole bunch of people here all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You're riding with them for a second, and then you're back to Lonely Land for the next 60K.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, tell me more. I don't know if there's, I don't have any questions. This all came together pretty quick, but, it sounds really exciting. And, those distances, like those are, I mean, 130K on a fat bike is a lot. People need to realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you did that 24-hour, fundraiser thing last year. And
I don't know.
So you know what a big day is.
I guess so. I mean, I slept a little bit. No. I had a really hard time with moisture management, so it makes me a bit nervous with riding 130.
Well, that's another good point. So when I went out to Manitoba, obviously I was terrified of the wind chill. I was terrified of the cold temperatures that could be. And our day was a weird one because it started at minus 19 and got to a balmy, I'm looking right into Dean's eyes right now, a balmy 3 degrees. And so it was a mess. Like, it was everything from the iciest of ice to actual impassable mud. And so I found that very interesting in the clothing and layering.
Yeah.
Obviously there were people out there that knew exactly what they're doing and they had their system sorted, but I'm like just wearing my ski touring gear and trying to figure it out as I go. So the beauty of this one is obviously you need to be prepared. Obviously you can't go out there and not know what you're doing, but it gives you that opportunity to try it. Like if you're thinking of towing the line at a winter overnight or just going winter overnighting with your friends, here's a chance to try, like, what do I feel like when I'm like redlining and it's cold and I'm sweating, but I shouldn't be sweating. What should I be wearing?
Well, you shouldn't be redlining. That's the thing, right? It's like there's so many things.
Tell that to
Andy.
Andy, he's head down.
Yeah, well, you go out with nothing, right? You basically go out like cold, like start cold. So the 24-hour one in the middle of the night, at like 2-3 in the morning, it was like minus 21 or something down by the wetlands when I was riding. And, you know, eyes are sticking together and it's super humid. Yeah. It's super wet down there. So it's like, and then, you know, Doug was riding with me that during that, a lot of that he came at, mm-hmm. I met his headlight at, I don't know, 1 a.m. And, but yeah, that was the problem. And that route, like I just basically yo-yoed this route all night and, coming back, it's a lot, you're climbing pretty much the whole way back. So it's, and I wasn't paying enough attention to layering mm-hmm. down and layering up and layering down. The other thing I think about with something like this, when you've got a mix of like pavement, hard packs, possibly hard pack gravel road or logging roads or mm-hmm. gravel or hard pack or a single track, temperatures. When I think about all that, I think about all the airing up and down you'd be doing during the race. Mm-hmm. You're not just going to run like 8 pounds in your tires the whole time. It's gonna be like, oh, it's getting sketchy. I gotta drop 4.
Oh, yeah.
And then, oh, getting hit the pavement again. Gotta put 4 back in. And that's what I think about. Cause
that's something I've never, I'm planning. So don't worry, everyone. I'm planning on pre-riding the whole thing. I want to have the experience myself. I've never done that. I've never messed around with, I've never changed my tire pressure while riding.
It's a game changer. I just said, well, while riding, you have to stop. It kind of is hard when you're riding.
Yeah, I'm not going to bother pump and stuff. But I'm sure people that perform better than I do that kind of stuff.
Maybe. It just depends on terrain, right? It's such a it's such a fickle beast, you know, setting your PSI.
Yeah.
I can see it making a difference.
Totally.
Yeah, I've ridden most of this stuff. And unless, of course, the single track is super, super soft, I don't think I would change. Because I run my same pressure on our groomed single track as I do on our gravel, like ice gravel, snow back roads. But yeah, if it's all wind drifted, and again, who am I to tell anyone what to do with their bikes?
No, it's just stuff I think about, like the logistics of getting the tire.
Well, the other dynamic
right.
too is that you can treat this as just an adventure and just go out and do it, or you can treat this as a race, and so then when you're racing other people, you're considering your own equipment, you're considering the climate, you're considering the route, but also the person that you know is just behind you.
Yeah.
And are they struggling? Would you have time to make an adjustment to help you? Or are they right on your back and you just got to keep going no matter what? So there's all kinds of really fun dynamics in that kind of a scenario.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. No, it sounds really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. On that, the Manitoba ride, I found that I was never cold once the sun was up, but I was always getting it. We had like the most brutal northeast wind, just absolutely brutal. Like it would slow you down by 15 kilometers an hour, it felt like. And so I was never cold, but I could also never expose a lot of my skin, so it was like a weird, like trying to keep certain things covered but at the same time not trying to overheat.
Yeah,
because it was like, it wasn't that cold. It was only like -5 or -6, but then balmy, brutal wind. So whatever that means.
And then because it's a paid event, is it considered a supported event? So like say on the longer route, are there going to be feed stations out there?
There will be. We're working through some pretty fun ideas for that.
Yeah.
So I don't want to like
whiskey stations
out there. But,
there'll be some fun surprises out in the middle. You think you'll be out in the middle of nowhere, and you'll turn a corner and you'll be pleasantly surprised by what we have to offer.
Awesome. It was funny when in 2014, my buddy and I went out to Alaska. We did the World Single Speed Championships, and it was super chill. In fact, the fastest person didn't win. It's like it was all down to a derby at the end, right? So that's the people who won. But you'd hit a spot, and there were these places where you had to like, it's like, okay, you have to stop and you either have to do this activity or you have to take a shot of tequila. What are you going to do? And so it's like, tequila, it's faster. But, you know, tequila. And then by the time you finish I think there was like a clover leaf kind of thing. Like you do a lap, ring a gong, go out and do another lap, ring a gong, go out and come back, ring the gong. But, you know, you're 4, 5, 6 drinks in by the time you're at the end. It was so fun. It made it really fun. You go out and ride really hard, but you're kind of getting a little drunk at the same time. It was awesome. It's such a great
community. Well, getting that blood flowing is not going to help your situation.
Yeah, don't cut yourself. Yeah. Blood will be thin.
And so yeah, there will also be that sort of, there will be people roving about too, just sort of checking on stuff.
Yeah.
The thing that was wonderful about that, I keep bringing it up, so sorry. Maybe the drinking game today is Act of Epica or Andy Ward. If I say either of those things, you have to take a shot.
Yeah, I know, right? Like Lost Elephant.
But the Act of Epica, the thing they had going for them is Southern Manitoba has all those tiny, tiny little towns like 20 kilometers apart from each other. So they had these little feed stations that were so easy to set up. Like, don't get me wrong, it took a lot of planning, I'm sure. But it was like, wait, once we hit the backcountry here, there's nothing.
Yeah.
Like, we proved it this year. We did a 500 kilometer route that had nothing on it.
Yeah.
Right. And so like playing around with that, I'm like, oh no, like, what do we do? And so that it has been a bit of like, how do we set up feed station? But yeah, so we got some pretty Kootenai, let's call them Kootenai ideas for it, that I'm pretty excited about.
Cool.
And a bunch of people are on board already for it. So, yeah.
Right on. It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Not really. I just want, I believe that it's going to have that same amazing vibe that everyone in the bike packing community knows. It's weird to call it, like, to include this in a bike packing community, because it's not an overnighter. It's just a single day race or event. But I feel that these winter long distance rides attract the same people, right? Like, you're gonna, like, if you look down the list of the people who've signed up or have stopped me in the street and said, oh yeah, I'm doing your race, they are by and large alumni of one of the named Western Canada bikepacking events, right?
Yeah.
But then the cool thing is, a good friend, like a really great friend of mine who only mountain bikes, he only owns a mountain bike and a fat bike, that's it. He's like, oh yeah, I'm doing your race. I'm like, what? I haven't even told you about that. Mm-hmm. How do you even know about it? Like, he's not on any email list. He's not on anything. I truly have no idea how he knew about it. Like, I didn't even think he used social media. Maybe he's just one of those lurkers on social media. Mm-hmm. But he's like pumped because he's fit. He's up, down for an adventure. Like, he's a good adventure buddy. So it's like, awesome. Like, yeah, I was so stoked. I was like, I didn't even pitch it to him. Cause I'm like, this is going to sound weird, but you're a mountain biker, right? You like going and doing a 2.5 hour, like, techie, you live for the downs. But he's stoked. And I didn't even have to sell him on it. That was the crazy thing.
That's kind of my story too, Nathan, in that I'm in Vancouver all the time. And you know, I was at Lanyots a couple of weeks ago and talking about this event to one of the guys there, and he's like, oh yeah, I used to live in Calgary. That was really fun in the snow. And he's a total bike packer and underbiker kind of thing. But just the idea, again, it's that whole community that says, I love the adventure. I love the community of the people that adventure like I do. And yeah, that would be fun. I'd like to do that. And so to bring out people that are just going to explore the sport for the first time, or that have maybe dipped into it a bit. You know, Vancouver doesn't have a massive fat bike scene, but there's a lot of people that love the idea of it and would love to meet a bunch of people that do it and have that one time to say, yeah, I did that. I can, you know, check that off of my little bucket list. That's pretty cool. So,
well, you should I'm tell excited all those to see those people show up. Tell all those people there's fat bikes to rent out here. All the shops are renting.
That's right.
Bring yourself a little bus load of, fair weather riders.
Yeah. So the what's it called? One of the qualifiers for the ITI, is it the Arrowhead 135? Is that so?
Yeah, the Arrowhead 135.
Can this cold ride qualify? Become a qualifying ride?
I did start this thinking about that, and then I have been out. You're not the first person to ask that, but no, this year it won't.
Oh, right. If the run is first,
it's a bit of a question that we've got.
Honestly, I feel a bit weird about it because, like, again, we went and did the Act of Epica. And so that was 230 kilometers. And yes, if it was minus 40 and had snowed even, let's say 30 centimeters, that would be a legitimate qualifier for the Iditarod. But the year we went, it was, I rode it on like
skinny bike, right?
Yeah. I rode it on a normal bike. And so did Darren Madley, and studded tires, but whatever. And we were cruising. And so it was not a test of our ability to survive out there.
Right.
And so I'm like, maybe I hold the Iditarod, as I should probably, hold the Iditarod very high.
Mm.
But I'm like, I don't want anything to do with telling someone, if you've done this, you can go do the Iditarod.
Yeah. Again, I don't know how that works. I would imagine you have to reach out to that organization and ask them if this.
Exactly. I'm sure they have their ways.
Yeah.
At the same time, in the future, I'm not closing obstacles. I think it would be super cool to add whatever they have to do. Because I think they have to do like a mandatory water boil.
Yeah.
Like you have to stop and turn snow into boiling water.
Right.
And then continue. You have to carry a certain amount of gear, even if you're not going to have to use it. You have to carry it and be prepared. And who knows? I'm sure that has all sorts of qualifications. But I think that would be a cool thing to add.
Mm.
I think right now we're just like, this is our first kick of the can. So let's make it good in the way we know how to make it good.
Yeah.
And then learn new things afterwards.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. Again, I'm coming into this personally, not really. I'm learning a lot about fat biking and the area even. I'm just excited to do something that sparks a fire in this community and to be able to serve as best I know how these people that are doing amazing things on their bikes. And just asking a bunch of questions and hearing the comments after, and then just being like, okay, that was cool. Now what can we do? And there is somebody that has this kind of style. They've been to that event before. How does that affect what we're doing? How can we build value into the scene so all these events around us can also be built up by the fact that we pulled off something really great?
Yeah, it sounds so cool. I'm already thinking about my bike. I'm already thinking about my bike and the gear I'm going to pack.
And there will be... there will be a mandatory gear list
just
for safety reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely on the safety side. So you're not going to be able to ride it on a naked bike, which I think is good. I think it tests people. And then it also forces people not to be idiots. Like you can go out in your go fast gear and maybe it would be fine for all day, but you never know what's going to happen out there. Like this ride hits some pretty remote areas way down there. And so you don't know what's going to come barreling over that, up that valley or down over those hills.
It's funny. Yeah. When I fat bike around here, I don't know, you might attest to this as well, but I have everything. I have a Puffy. I've got a couple like feed bags with, you know, my InReach in there or a cash battery. I went riding with some people. And this dude broke his chain and had no water, no chain links, no tools, no Puffy layer. Like if you get a flat in the winter and it's minus 25, you better have something to put on or you better start running out to stay warm. You know what I mean? The winter is it's serious business in the winter. You can't fuck around. Yeah. Like you have to have the stuff with you, you know?
You and I are a little bit different there. Yeah. I have the theory because I am that person that just goes and does the same 12-kilometer loop 4 or 5 days a week. I'm very much of the, if anything happens, I'm walking out. I'm not going to use a tool.
Dude, you got to bring your stuff. You got to bring some stuff. And
I bring nothing. I don't even.
Well,
I am your friend without the chain.
Oh, dude. Oh, you can't use my pump. Sorry. Walk out. Yeah. I'm going riding.
I don't want to. I want to walk out.
Yeah. Well, I just think, don't we live in an amazing part of the world? Like, just how fabulous is it that we can access absolute remoteness so quickly? Like, even where I live in Chilliwack, we're on the edge of the West Cascades or the Coast Mountain Range, and that stuff is rugged out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, a 20-minute bike ride can get you into serious trouble or can give you a vista like you've never seen before in your life. And that's like, our whole province is like that. So
yeah,
it's just amazing. All you people that aren't from BC, come on out and check it out.
So if people want to learn more about Cold Ride, where do they go to do that?
Yeah, good question. I think we're going to be probably most active on Instagram coming up here, and that is just at Have a Cold Ride. On Instagram, you can catch us there. You can also catch us on our website, which is haveagoodride.com.
And that's haveagoodride.com.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's the banner. Yeah, that's maybe the explain event that just organizing slightly. Banner.
What's that?
Just the Good Ride, Cold Ride relationship.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, Cold Ride is one of the races, one of the events that we're putting on from Have a Good Ride, which is an organization that is set up to be able to do events and gatherings and different conferences and summits to bring together these action adventure sport communities and find ways to build up the community and have a great time together. Cool. So that's sort of the bigger picture.
All right. Well, Dean and Nathan, did you have something to say? You've been doing so much talking. Say,
so Cold Ride is like, under the Have a Good Ride umbrella.
No, kidding.
So it's at the haveagoodride.com.
Awesome. Right on. Well, that's great. I'm super excited. And let's keep in touch. And we'll keep promoting it. And it sounds like a great time. And I'm off that weekend. So I gotta make it down.
Yeah, Steve. Sure. Really great chatting with you. Yeah, thanks you too, a lot Dean. For doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll get this one out.
This is good.
I'll get this one out pretty quick. Because I don't have anything.
Not before Thursday, because I have a meeting with SoStar.
Oh, so do you want me to hold off?
I'm joking.
No, tell me. It's important.
No, I'm joking. Okay. That's me being unprofessional, and Dean's going to give me a finger wagging later.
Oh, you shouldn't have put that podcast out.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Dean, what?
I was just going to say, Dean has to like keep me in line all the time.
He's the janitor. He's the cleanup crew with all your bullshit you put out there. Oh, guys, it was really good to talk. So I'll say goodbye. Stay on the line, though, because we'll just have a little wind down. But it was really good to talk to you, and good to meet you too, Dean. And I'll see you. I'm really stoked about it. I've been wanting to do
a
thing for a while. And
No, we will hang out in Cranbrook. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, right on. Okay, thanks, guys.
Cool.
Okay, that's it. So, I was just going to – I just have to do, a bit of a monologue over that and get it out. It can wait, Nathan, if it's – seriously.
No,
I know it was a joke, but
yeah, I don't think you're going to have it out in the next 24 hours. I just have to send one email to the lady from Rec Sites and Trails BC before this gets sort of too much momentum behind it.
Yeah.
So I just want to get one email, but that's fine.
I don't want to talk too much because then I want to just put the rest of this in. But have you been getting lots of great support for it from the community and from the groups? And
honestly, as you know, and I said it to Dean, I was like trying not to make it too much of a thing on the podcast. But I was terrified to say, I'm running an event that's going to cost you guys money.
Oh, yeah. And it just kind of went against your ethos maybe a little bit?
I don't know. I think every single person that I've said that to, it's like, whoa.
I want to thank Dean and Nathan again for their time and thank all of you for tuning in, as I always say. Really enjoyed that conversation. And I'm not sure if I'm going to do that or not, that ride. I really want to. I'm drawn to it. Like I said in the podcast, I had a bit of a challenge last year when I did that 24-hour thing. I didn't go very far in 24 hours. I had a really hard time managing moisture, like I said. But 135K on a fat bike, it's significant, right? Like it's not a short distance. It's not the Iditarod or anything like that, but definitely something that you need to dose out and, learn how to stay dry. And those are skills that I think I'm slowly learning over time. And, internally I feel afraid to do something like that, but that just means I should do it basically. Someone told me once, it's like, do things afraid. Like if you calculate the risk and you do it afraid, just make sure you have all your shit. And like they said, there's going to be a minimum gear requirement to do something like that, which makes sense. Like we also talked about in the podcast, but something to look forward to definitely in the winter. I think sometimes Canadian winters can be, fairly long, but can be pretty awesome if you've got activities to do and someone awesome to share it with. So, if you know some other people that are your friends who are kind of on the fence about getting a fat bike and riding in the winter, encourage them to get out there and join you in the festivities, if you will.
So anyway, I just really appreciate Nathan and Dean, and I hope you check out their Instagram and their website at Have a Cold Ride on Instagram, and haveagoodride.com is their website, so you can check it out. And I'm going to put that in the show notes as well. So that's all I've got. That's all I've got this week. I want to thank you again for your support. Thanks for your patience. I look forward to reaching out to you more as the winter comes along, and I'm going to have a little bit more time, hopefully, to have some conversations. And yeah, thanks again. Love you. And don't forget to reach out. Whip out your device, record me something, and send it to myback40podcast@gmail.com. Okay? Don't be shy. All right. Until next week, keep the rubber side down.